Conflicts over putting Ten Commandments displays on public grounds keep recurring, but they shouldn't. The Ten Commandments form the foundation of federal and local laws. So writes John Eidsmo in a recent article. John Eidsmo is a constitutional attorney. He's the author of the classic book, Christianity and the Constitution, plus a new three-part series on the theological and historical foundations for laws. He's a professor of law at Oak Brook College of Law and Government Policy. He's also senior counsel and resident scholar for the Foundation for Moral Law. John, it's great to have you back on the program. I appreciate that so much.
Jerry, it's always such a pleasure to be with you, and we've known each other now for at least 30 years, I think.
Yes.
I appreciate the fact that not only are you such an expert at getting the message out to people, but you're a scholar and writer in your own right as well.
Wow, where do I send the $20? No, just kidding. All right, this is Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And, John, let's get right into it. I understand that during the spring of 2018, the Alabama legislature even passed a state constitutional amendment, which goes to the voters for approval, but it's related to the Ten Commandments being allowed to be posted in public. Tell us about that.
It was passed in the legislature in Alabama, a constitutional amendment to our state constitution. Once it's passed by the legislature, then it goes to the voters to be ratified in the next election. And so that'll take place in November, of course. And we think the chances of it passing are very good. Of course, once it passes, there'll be undoubtedly a constitutional challenge to it in a federal court. But we see this as primarily an opportunity to educate Alabama voters and hopefully voters throughout the nation as well on what the real role of the Ten Commandments is and how they are not simply a religious document. They're a moral code. They are a civil code. They contain provisions relating to criminal law as well, and they are the foundation of Western law. Mm-hmm. And we think people need to understand that, because if the foundations be destroyed, what shall the righteous do?
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting? Just last week, I happened to be in Washington, D.C., and I had an opportunity. Pardon me? Did you hear me? Can you hear me?
I'm sorry. That was a bad joke there. You said you'd been in Washington, D.C., and I said I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I thought you were having trouble hearing. Okay, yeah. No, so anyway, I was in D.C., and I was on the backside of the U.S. Supreme Court building. Now, this was built in the 1930s. And I was making little videos and so forth. But right there on the backside of the building, there's this frieze with these little statuettes and of their different lawgivers through the centuries. But right there in the middle, as most important, central, biggest figure of them all is Moses holding, you know, one tablet of the law in one hand and the other tablet of the law in the other hand. It's clearly he's the central guy. And no, I thought, you know, this is made in the 1930s. That says a lot about, you know, what they thought of the Ten Commandments, at least in those days.
Not only is Moses central, but seated. He is larger than the figures on his right and on his left. And here's the interesting thing. Facing him, on the one side, you have Solon, the Greek lawgiver, representing Western law. On the other side, you have Confucius, the Eastern lawgiver, representing Eastern law, both of them looking to Moses as the central source of their law.
That's very interesting. And, you know, I understand that even as the Supreme Court justices go into their chambers, now this I've never seen because I've never been in those chambers, perhaps you have, but anyway, there are these two tablet-like formations with the in Roman numerals, 1 through 5 on one door, and then 6 through 10 on the other in Roman numerals, and that represents, I understand it, the Ten Commandments. But later on, people try to say, "Oh, that represents the first 10 amendments to our Constitution, which are the Bill of Rights," which is correct.
Well, that's only very recent. They started to say that that might be the Bill of Rights. Another thing they've said, contradicting that, of course, is that it is a code of ancient law. Well, tell me a code of ancient law on two stones that are numbered 1 through 10 like that. And obviously, the intent at the time this was created was to be the Ten Commandments. And that was clearly recognized by court docents as they would take people through tours until the Ten Commandments cases started coming up, and only then did they come up with this alternate revisionist explanation that this is ancient law. I'm waiting for them to see a figure of the Ten Commandments being carved, and they'll try to say that's James Madison carving the Bill of Rights on stone or something like that. Yeah. Absurd.
Yeah, it is. Well, okay, let me ask you this. Now, we know that the U.S. Supreme Court has weighed in on the subject of the Ten Commandments and are they allowed to be, displayed in public. We know in 1980, the Supreme Court said no when it comes to being shown in school in a written form, which is a terrible decision, Stone v. Graham. Oh, Stone.
Probably the worst Establishment Clause decision in history, and it was only a 5-4 decision, and of the 9 justices who decided that case, I don't believe any of them are on the court still today.
Well, that's true. They all, most of them are dead, I believe. But William Brennan, I believe, wrote that, but John Paul Stevens gave his imprimatur to it. And some of these are...
And Stevens is still living, that's right.
Oh.
He's not on the court anymore.
Got it. Okay, so let's go on. Let's jump ahead to the mid 2000, so around 2005 thereabouts, the U.S. Supreme Court made 2 rulings related to the Ten Commandments being displayed, outside in a public arena, and I don't understand it. In one context, or maybe it wasn't necessarily outside, in one context, in Kentucky, they said, nope, Ten Commandments not allowed, and in another context, in Texas, they said, yep, Ten Commandments are allowed. So it's like, this is so schizophrenic. Can you explain that?
I can try to. First of all, you have 8 justices who are consistent. You have 4 justices who said that both are constitutional. You have 4 justices who said that neither is constitutional. And in between, you have Justice Breyer, who said the Texas display is constitutional, but the Kentucky display is not. And the main reason that Breyer made that distinction was that in Texas, the Ten Commandments were a monument that was in the grounds of the state capitol. There were all sorts of other monuments all over the grounds there, and this just happened to be one of many.
Okay.
Whereas in Kentucky, originally the Ten Commandments had stood alone, and then they surrounded them by various other historical displays, but the court majority, Breyer writing the decision, said that that doesn't change the fact that the purpose in setting those up was to promote religion. Well, my question would be, what religion? In fact, I recall one time I was even asked in an interview one time, what do you think a Jew would feel like seeing those Ten Commandments?
No way. No way. Are people that ignorant?
I am absolutely serious.
Oh, my goodness.
I just said, ask Moses.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I remember one time I was interviewing Jay Sekulow about the old Roy Moore case, the Ten Commandments, going back when he was a when Roy Moore was a Gadsden, Alabama circuit court judge or whatever, a small little nondescript courtroom.
Right.
He had a hand-carved plaque of the Ten Commandments, and people were giving him grief about that. And I asked Jay Sekulow, I said, you know, the other side are saying Roy Moore is trying to establish religion. And here's what Jay Sekulow said. And which religion would that be? Rabbinic Judaism?
Well said.
Yes. Okay, so why should the Ten Commandments be allowed, in your opinion, to be displayed in public? Yes, even in a public forum.
Because they are not only a religious code, and I'm not going to deny they're religious, but they are also the foundation of Western law. In fact, Alfred the Great, when he drafted his first code called the Book of Dooms, the first written code of law to govern all of England back in 890 AD, he began it with a recitation of the Ten Commandments, and he had taken that from the original Syriac rather than going to the Latin Vulgate and doing so.
Hmm.
We can see all throughout history that the principles of the Ten Commandments are the foundation of Western law. The idea of respect for human life, which we see in the command, thou shalt not murder. Respect for property, which we see in the command, thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not covet. Respect for truth, which we see in the command against taking the name of God in vain, which prohibits perjury as well as blasphemy, and thou shalt not bear false witness, respect for family, which we see in the adultery commandment, and honor thy father and thy mother, and respect for God himself, because God is the source of governmental authority, and God is the source of human rights. And so, definitely, they are a foundational document in Western law, and what I say is the Ten Commandments, when they are displayed like this, they are actually a statement of a political philosophy. A political philosophy that is very well expressed in our Declaration of Independence, that begins by acknowledging our dependence upon the laws of nature and of nature's God, and goes on to the self-evident truths that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. The idea that human rights come from God, and therefore they are above the state. If rights came from the state could take them away, and so they're not unalienable rights, they are negotiable privileges. But the philosophy that our nation is founded upon, as expressed in our most fundamental document, the Declaration of Independence, is simply that we have our rights from God, that to secure rights, not to grant them, governments are instituted among men, and they derive their just authority from the consent of the governed. Those are basic principles of biblical law, and the Ten Commandments are a symbol of them.
Why such animosity against the Ten Commandments?
I think the animosity is based on the fact of the rebellion against biblical law in general and against Christianity specifically, that the Ten Commandments symbolize a philosophy of law that many in our legal community no longer hold. Today, the idea is that rights either are granted by the state or that rights are somehow inherent within us, and how they could be inherent within us without God having created us and giving us those rights. Where did they come from? If man is simply an evolutionary product from a lower form of life, well, do amoebas have rights? Do dinosaurs have rights? Do ape-like creatures have rights and so on? In other words, there is no concept of human rights that makes any sense from what I can tell, other than the concept that they come from a higher source than government. And what higher source could that be but God himself?
Well, I think the real, you're absolutely right. And I think the real objection people have to the Ten Commandments really in many ways get back to the very first one. I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. So the idea of the exclusivity of the Judeo-Christian God, I think that's where the real animosity is toward. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the exclusivity of God, I think we talk about ethical monotheism is a term that I'll use, that unlike most of the nations surrounding Israel, Israel was monotheistic, believing in one God, and the nations around them, they had degenerated from an original monotheism into polytheism, but one God means there is one truth and one law. If you believe in many gods, well, Marduk of the Babylonians may have drafted one law code, and Ra of the Egyptians another, and Zeus of the Greeks still another code, and so on. And the idea that there is one God means that there is one law and one truth. And that is probably what they're rebelling against.
All right, we have half a minute left. Morallaw.org for more information. John Eisenbo, why don't you give us a 30-second wrap-up?
Foundation for Moral Law will be in the forefront of the battle to pass this amendment this fall, but also nationwide, to stand for the supremacy of God's law and our right to acknowledge God as part of the first liberty guaranteed, not granted, but guaranteed by the Bill of Rights, the right of religious liberty itself. And to seek our help or to find out more of what we're doing, please go to our website, www.morallaw.org.
All right, John Eisenbo, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry. Always good to be with you.
You too. God bless. Bye-bye.